What begins as romance in a Boise bar transforms into something far darker, a chronicle of how domestic violence creeps into a life so gradually that you don't recognize the danger until you're already trapped. Kelly Sundberg's memoir has become essential reading, not because it sensationalizes trauma, but because it reveals an uncomfortable truth. Abuse doesn't announce itself with dramatic red flags. It arrives in small moments of control, unpredictable disappearances, and charm that feels like safety after a lifetime of emotional coldness. When Kelly met Caleb at 26, she'd already endured a string of disappointing relationships and a childhood marked by her mother's volatile moods. He seemed different, a fiction writer who built his own cabin, whose body felt made for hers. But warning signs appeared immediately, days of silence followed by intense affection, a pattern that would escalate into something unthinkable. Kelly grew up in Salmon, Idaho, a one-stoplight town where mountains felt like walls. Her mother worked 12-hour hospital shifts, her moods volatile, sometimes erupting into violence. At 16, a truck tried to run her down. She hid under a porch until her friend Megan rescued her. She never told her mother. This silence became the blueprint for her marriage. Pregnant after knowing Caleb only 8 months, Kelly wanted an abortion. His counteroffer, marriage, with a warning their relationship wouldn't survive otherwise. Despite never wanting motherhood, despite her father's frozen fear at their engagement, she agreed. On their drive home, they witnessed a fatal accident. The family's last name was Perfect, a haunting symbol of the illusion she was chasing. Soon after, she discovered cut phone wires in their apartment and evidence of the previous tenant's mental illness. These physical manifestations of disorder mirrored the emotional instability developing around her, but pregnancy had made running impossible. The first thing Kelly broke was an orange Fiestaware plate. Caleb had trapped her against the sink during an argument, his smug expression saying, "Look what you've done." Sweeping up broken things became routine. The first physical violence came months after she discovered his infidelities. When she tried to leave with baby Reed, Caleb pinned her against the wall. She fled to her mother, who simply said, "Marriage is hard." Kelly documents her own psychological distortion, feeling strange tenderness toward Caleb after his outbursts, wondering if his actions were justified. This explains why victims stay. The transformation happens so incrementally that recognizing the crossed line becomes impossible. Caleb usually punched her head, leaving bruises she could hide. When her friend Rebecca noticed, Kelly lied, "I think I must have done it in my sleep." He only hit her face once, after trying to force Ambien into her mouth. When she resisted, he punched her, splitting her lip and eye. "You made me hit you in the face," he said mournfully. "Now everyone is going to know." Kelly apologized to him. Kelly tried everything to fix what couldn't be fixed. She wrote gratitude lists following Oprah's advice, thanking the universe for Caleb's happiness, never her own. She practiced mindfulness, learning to release worry about past violence if she wasn't suffering right now. Caleb consumed violent pornography constantly, sometimes calling in sick to indulge for hours. After one couple's session, the counselor told Caleb, "She is not what you led me to believe she was." They moved into a dormitory, hoping change would help. Caleb briefly attended AA before returning to alcohol. Kelly took Ambien that left her with no memory of sex. They both worked too hard, medicated too much, hoped too desperately. The breaking point came on Reed's 7th birthday. While cleaning for the party, Caleb chased her through dormitory hallways, screaming obscenities. Later, Reed approached her. "I don't like it when the dogs climb into bed with me because they're scared." Looking into her son's eyes, a child who resembled her as a little girl, Kelly finally acknowledged what she'd been denying. The facade crumbled not when she was suffering, but when she realized her child was suffering too. At the shelter, the counselor explained the abuse cycle: tension building, battering, reconciliation, calm. As abuse escalates, you spend less time in calm and more in tension. When Kelly downplayed her situation, the counselor was direct. No, your situation is bad. It's really bad. Kelly remembered Caleb's hands around her neck, choking her until the light grew bright and foggy. The final break came after Reed's party. Caleb threw his ceramic cereal bowl at Kelly, shattering it against her foot. Then she discovered him looking at pornography while she'd been at the shelter trying to save their marriage. A window opened in her mind, and she jumped through it. With Reed at daycare, she grabbed what she could while Caleb followed, screaming, "You are provoking me to abuse you." That night, Reed told her, "I didn't like it when you and Daddy fought, because when you fought, you only had time for each other." This time, Kelly had to be not just leaving him, but gone. After leaving, Kelly obsessively searched for answers. Was it his family's dysfunction, his mother's controlling love, his church's guilt-based teachings, toxic masculinity, disappointment in his writing career, jealousy of Kelly's success? Or was it Kelly herself, her inadequacy, her resistance, her depression? After exhausting herself with questions, Kelly realized maybe it was time to stop wondering what caused Caleb's violence and start focusing on her own healing. The aftermath was complicated. Kelly faced workplace discrimination and gave Caleb nearly everything in the divorce, but slowly she rebuilt. During a 4-day drive to Idaho with her father, they repaired their relationship. Kelly realized how Caleb had gradually isolated her, even taking over driving until she became fearful of it herself. Now, with hands on the steering wheel, she heard her father's pride. "I'm glad that you're the one driving." Reed and Kelly eventually moved into a tiny house in Ohio with skylights that cast rainbows inside. During Christmas cookie making, Kelly's mother insisted Kelly was a great kid, kind, honest. Later, she followed Kelly into the laundry room. "We know how much you've been through, and we are so proud of you." Kelly broke down crying. Kelly wasn't made strong by surviving abuse. She was strong before, during, and after Caleb. That strength gave her the integrity to demand counseling, exhaust every solution, and ultimately leave when nothing worked. In their new home, Reed curled beside her in the hammock and said, "Everything is just better now, isn't it?" The title, "Goodbye, Sweet Girl," refers to both her son's innocence and her own, to the naive young woman who believed love could fix a broken man. Throughout her marriage, she maintained a carefully curated blog about family life, hiding what mattered most. She stopped because what she wasn't writing became too large to ignore. She stopped because she wanted to write, "He ends." She stopped because she wanted to write, "I begin." By breaking her silence, Kelly reclaimed her narrative from the man who tried to control it through violence. Her final message to women thinking of leaving is simple: jump. Take the leap into uncertainty, because what waits on the other side, a life where your heart transforms from a tight fist into an open hand, is worth the temporary fear of falling. You don't need to become stronger. You already are.